Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Recording is in progress. There she is. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Jules Gill. It's the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, UBP. Massive shout out to the person whose name I forgot, and I'm sorry, but I do remember you tweeting us saying that you got a tattoo this week, and the thing that bonded you and your tattooist was that you were both a fan of the show, and they were chanting UBP between them. Big love, and hopefully your tattoo has turned out very well. Put some bepanthem on it. That's the thing that you're supposed to do.
See, I like the idea that they're getting their tattoo right, and they're out there laughing, and every single time they're chanting UBP, the pen's just kind of so that's ended up like ruining this thing, so they'll forever look at that tattoo and just think, oh, that was a great time when I had a tattoo ruined by
bonded.
Some
it's
a bold egg
bringing people together. Sadly we didn't get to do last week's episode, but we're back this week and we're going to roll in a few different questions from that were submitted anyway for the show a couple weeks ago, as well as everything else that got sent in. If you're new to the Untitled Banter podcast, we do a weekly roundup of different thoughts, questions, whatever you'd like us to talk about, ranging from food to movie takes to video games to just whatever's going on, Jules Gill.
So whatever.
And so this last week, maybe it was the last couple of weeks, Time's a Flat Circle was the return of the Matrix as a talking point, which is to say that our opening question is from PG Quips, the man with the best name ever.
Love it.
Who says, what was your favorite Matrix game? Path of Neo, Enter the Matrix, or Matrix Online? Also, will we see another Matrix game in the future? Also, blue or red pill?
Oh my God, that's a lot to digest right there. I just have to say, what's the one where you play as Niobe and go
into the Matrix?
Right, that... Yeah. If you say that that's your favorite game, you are a narc. You are a narc.
What do you mean?
You are a narc.
No one prefers a Neo alternate reality criminal. No one prefers Path of Neo.
What are you on about?
What are you on about?
Path of Neo was the better one because at the end boss, you got the giant Agent Smith. When the Wachowskis came in and they were just kind of like, oh, you know, the end Jesus thing that we wrote for the film, that would be great in the cinema, but it's boring. They even said it's boring. God. Their own ideas. And it's had the mecha giant Smith fight with the
when he
with
gets glasses. He gets his glasses from the
glasses,
billboard.
And he has a little smirk and I'm just there like, oh, mate, this is it. This is where it's at.
I do remember, I mean, I at the time I really liked Path of Neo, but I was a bit let down by the fact that they tried to do the bullet time scene. And I remember when, I still remember little teenage me trying to do the bullet time scene on the top of the lobby, top of the rooftop, and Neo just bends over backwards and then you could just run around in that animation. And I was just running around doing the limbo. And I just thought that was a bit naff. But Enter the Matrix, though, was the one where they shot all the footage and it tied in with Reloaded and you were driving the car.
No, you are correct, right?
Yeah.
In the fact that they shot footage for the film, but all of it was bunk.
No, it was not, Jules Gill.
Yes, it was, mate. Nothing happened in that game that furthered the plot or the understanding.
She caught him with a car. I don't know. He would have hit the ground if not.
Are you telling me that it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's a central view in it. It is to play this game to really understand the lore of the Matrix.
Well, it's been so happened. They tie it in because in the Animatrix, in the Call of the Osiris, the message that's being sent.
I mean, you're already listing a thing that isn't the game.
Well, I'm just saying. You know, well, the signal from the ship that they respond to at the start of Reloaded was gotten to them by Niobe's ship, by everything that happened in Animatrix, and by the Enter the Matrix game. Therefore, it is essential canon, Jules Gill.
Essential canon is literally, you're just like, you've basically told me that the equivalent of a short animated film and an entire video game is basically the equivalent of somebody leaving a post-it note on a kettle. Like, there is nothing that I could have gleaned from that
I couldn't
have got from a little 2 second. Who delivered this? This guy.
You're not wrong. I definitely appreciate the scale of production. I like the fact that they literally shot both Reloaded and Revolutions and all the Enter the Matrix scenes all in one go with the same cast and everything else. I still love that they do that. Like, because no one would do that these days. It would take no. a very specific auteur or, you know, some sort of creative force to will that.
Hideo Kojima is the only one that could do it. And we do not need to give him any more projects. He's got a racing game in Death Stranding now, so let's just leave him at it.
Oh my God.
To answer the question though, my answer would actually be the MMORPG that was the Matrix one, because as Ewan pointed out recently, rest his soul, he basically said that there was an online event in which Morpheus died. And that apparently is canon, and that's apparently why Morpheus is not going to be in the Matrix 4.
Oh, God, we didn't talk about this last week, did we?
No, yeah, we did.
He was gunned down by one of the, I think it was the Seraphites, because after, I mean, I don't know how hardcore you want to go on Matrix lore, but the,
listen,
the whole...
mate, I know that stepping into the ring with you is basically like, I've got brittle bones disease and you're Muhammad Ali. I'm not going to last 10 rounds, but go
I'm
going
to hug you to death. No, basically, it's just that, in the Matrix Online, Morpheus was gunned down, but then he was sort of, they never found the body or something. So he came back, and then it was like Thomas Anderson, as in Neo, reappears in the real world as Sarah Edmonton's, which is like an anagram of Thomas Anderson. It's a whole thing, but it seems like in the Matrix Resurrections that they're carrying on from where the Matrix Online left off. None of this has anything to do with the question, which is clearly that Enter the Matrix was the best Matrix game. I don't know what, I don't know where we are if it's not
absolute
that.
Absolute narc answer, but that's fine. You can have your opinion.
You can do
there.
The cartwheel in slow motion. It was so cool. I loved Enter the Matrix.
Red pill or blue pill, though?
Red pill or blue pill? I always forget which one's which, to be honest, as a hardcore Matrix fan. I should clearly know which one's
even,
which.
That's even better, though, because then that way you just go like 50-50, odds on a wake up or not. It's like a bit of a
I would definitely do...
What was it you took both at the same time?
That, just balance themselves out. You just sort of go on a hell of a trip and just sort of come back. Maybe you go through that mirror world and go back again.
I'd wake up a little bit and then go back to sleep.
Yeah, just a mild alarm clock startling you. I think I would take the one that lets me know the truth. I would rather know the truth about all things and then live with that. And at least I can be wholesome and I can find, I can build a little life in the weird wasteland with all the flying robots and everything. I would take that over, like, I guess you wouldn't even know the world is fake, but if they're offering you the pill, then you have to leave with that information. But the pill wipes the memory that you found out. So you wouldn't even know the question. So I guess there's that.
It's one of those things where, like, you're totally right. Knowing the truth would be the best thing, theoretically. Mm. But when you look at him, it's just like, the fashion sense is a bit dour. I'm not really into sweaty underground raves anymore. I've grown out of that.
It is a bit of a different swerve.
Don't really fancy all of the sort of like body modification things they've got going on there. Looks like it would hurt a bit or get rusty. I don't want to get like, I don't want to have to oil
my
parts.
There's a lot of rust in the Matrix real world.
And, and also it just looks a bit sort of grim and the food doesn't look very nice. And I don't think that it's, there's a lot about the real world that I'm just kind of like, just sounds like a real hassle.
Mm. So, and they definitely don't have video game consoles or multiple versions of the Switch in the real world.
How would you kill the time? Ooh, chatting about what you did in the Matrix.
Fair. If we're trying to kill time in the real world in the Matrix, would be that scene from Reloaded that goes on for 40 minutes where he's talking to the old man and he's just talking about, oh, there's machines over there. No, well, there's that too. But I mean, the dude, the name of the guy that's the wise old sage who just talks about, oh, that machine regulates our water supply. That machine
when he's having a little moment and he's looking over the edge and the guy comes up and he's there like, oh, there's machines that I don't even understand. Like, yes, bloody good you are then, mate.
And I feel like that would just be the entirety of every conversation in the Matrix. Overall, though, would we see another Matrix game in the future? I hope so. I feel like the technology exists to do a really cool, you know, third person slow motion style thing. But at the same time, I wonder how much that stuff just isn't in vogue anymore. Like, I would hope so, but...
Here's a question for you, right? Mm. So, outside in the real world, you've got old people that are there.
You do.
That are part of the little council that they've made, right? Now, how long has Zion been around?
Oh, my God. I don't know my dates off the top of my head.
They keep saying that they kill them off every, like, cycle, don't they? Like, the Reapers.
So, Neo... The Sentinels, well, the Architect and the Machines, they reset humanity. It's Neo is like the seventh one or the sixth one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so my thing is that there's pretty low chance that they've grown old, like, outside of that, right? So that means that they were technically plucked from the Matrix, unless the Matrix is kept in a perma-state of 1999 cusp of 2000s era, which it isn't, then that means that they were... How the hell would they get out? With dial-up? Like, you know what I mean? Like a modem? Are they trying to down it?
I guess the whole thing was that the original one was the person who freed the first few. But like, there's obviously, this is breaking my head because there's also millions of them in the human farm in real world anyway.
Yeah.
And the only person who ever freed their own mind was the kid. which is another Animatrix story, funnily enough.
Which was good. Like, I enjoyed that.
Which is really, really good. But yeah, I don't know. And I, like you said, there's that whole time period thing. I'd be curious to see what Matrix Resurrections does in regards to, like,
me too.
Does it feel newer? Does it feel like time has passed in that world or not?
I'm very glad I'm that type of Matrix fan where I just appreciate the movies, but I never really got into the super deep lore, because the more and more I got into it, the more I was just like, oh, it looks like it's very techy. And
I think I've said to you before, I said on this podcast, that I love a big, stupid, convoluted lore. Like, just give, I love it. I love all the terms. Give me everything. I love memorizing all of Metal Gear Solid and everything else.
That's literally all your favorite games. You love The Legend of Zelda when it's like all of their convoluted timeline thing. Metal Gear Solid. You love Death Stranding.
Yep.
Oh, this is, oh,
Death Stranding's ending let me down, but I'm literally wearing a Kojima shirt as I record this, but like, give me a big stupid lore and I'll try and keep up with all the terms for it. We talked a lot about the Matrix there.
Yeah, thank you, PG Quips.
Yes, massive thank you to PG Quips. Next question from Marcus the Thief. Afternoon, year legends. With God of War Ragnarok wrapping up the Norse setting, where are you hoping for the next setting to be if they continue the franchise?
The moon. I want them to fight moon
gods. The thing is with this, I did a video back in 2018, whenever this game first came out, where you can find a slab of wood in the game, which shows Tyr, the guy that goes between the different mythologies anyway, visiting Japanese mythology, Celtic mythology, what looked like Christian mythology, and all that kind of stuff, which does open the idea up of Kratos battering Jesus, which
I could be very, very much up for that, because it's really weird. There's obviously some religions that are just like, no, we're not going to have our deities mocked, and that's completely up to them. That's like their beliefs. But at the same time, going toe-to-toe with Jesus and nailing him to the cross would actually be quite a cathartic experience for some people out there. I find it would be quite fun. Plus,
if they make Jesus
like really ripped, like sexy Jesus, then that way the Christians will be really happy too, because they'll be like, man, Jesus looks real good. Right now
that's the version I want to play as. I think that that's the whole thing with the way that they've teased it, where the thing that I said in the video, which is what I state to you now, is I would love them to do Japanese mythology, just because I feel like, you know, Shinto worship, and I remember looking up, I forget the name of the specific god, but there is a god, there is a dragon god of sea and storms, and he just looks really cool, and I love the idea of that. If we're going for sheer spectacle, I think that would be really cool.
The thing is that they're wrapping up with the Norse mythology. I feel like they're wrapping up fairly quickly with it, because there's a lot of Norse gods. I would love them, and they've obviously done like a lot of the Roman gods, they've done a lot of the Greek gods as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that Japanese mythology would make sense, but I would like them to delve into some Celtic British lore as well. I feel like that would actually be quite interesting.
Because they've got, obviously, with Tyr being in the new trailer, and then they've said this is the last Norse one, and they've switched the director and stuff, which we got a question about that too. But it is that thing of like, what is God of War to some degree? Like, I'd like that they proved that it didn't need to be Greek, that they could do Norse. But then I just wonder if it becomes the franchise that just dips into different mythologies, and maybe that's how you extend it or something. It's just, I don't know what you do with that franchise overall, other than just angry Kratos and Atreus do stuff.
I really hope that they know when to cap it. Like, don't carry on the God of War franchise, because the break and the reboot was the sort of like sorbet experience that we needed to refresh us to go back into it. But I feel like the cinematic arc of God of War definitely has a sell-by date, and I really don't hope that it overstays its welcome and then just delves further and further into to get like the... Because that's what you end up with the Dynasty Warriors franchise. You end up just going back to the same thing over and over again and just saying, hey, what about this officer that was at this battle? Let's have him as a playable character. It's like, nobody wants you to just drag up the things just for the sake of dragging it up.
No, totally. That was obviously what Metal Gear became as well. I think the God of War, like, as much as it does have a lore you can get stuck into, it's not lore dependent. It's way more character dependent. So I like the gameplay teaser that they put out. They have that whole thing where Atreus wants Kratos to go to war. And he's like, could you think more like a general and less like a father? And he snaps at that.
No.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they extend, like, you build it out and make it so that, you know, it becomes this sort of big manifestation of him divorcing himself from how he used to be and how he used to think. And that should manifest as trying to be a better father.
I feel like this might go down the route of the Last of Us 2, where we're going to lose a central figure that is going to be very important to people, but it's going to actually be quite fitting because they've done all they can do.
Like, can you imagine if they kill Kratos?
In actual fact, him turning around and saying, no, I'm not going to go to war, is literally him renouncing the God of War title. When you look at it like that on a thematic level, and he's passing it to his son. So it's either going to be that his son becomes Loki in the sense, kills him, takes the reign, brings about Ragnarok and the end of all things, or it's a fact that he's going to pass on and the mantle's going to go to somebody else like Tyr.
Because there's that whole thing in the mural from the end of the 2018 one, where you see him, it looks like a lot like him, dying in Atreus's arms and birthing the giant snake whose name I've forgotten.
Yeah, the one that will eat the world. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it's just like that snake is white with like red scales and stuff. In the original, in the 2018 game, everyone thinks that's him reincarnated, and it would explain a whole bunch of different stuff. But yeah, I think if they end up killing Kratos, doing what they did to a certain someone in Last of Us 2, I don't know if that would go down very well. But I like the idea of like what you said of him sort of going like, no, I won't go back. Like I've matured, yeah. And the whole message in the 2018 one was we need to be better. So it's just like that whole comment on violence overall.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've had a few games that have managed to show like the cycle of violence and revenge doesn't. It just brings about more suffering, and the only way to break it is like, to die. You can't escape it. Like even John Marston's like story is like he got redemption from his family, but he couldn't be a part of it. He had to die in order for it to like free them from his from paying for his sins. But his son, when he goes on and does it, kills. Oh, what's his name? The guy in
Edgar
epilogue,
Ross, I think.
Edgar Ross. He starts a new cycle of violence, so he doesn't actually learn from it.
That was like the underlying tragedy of that whole story, that he ends up becoming just like his dad, even though his dad was trying to teach him about sheep wrangling or whatever it was. Yeah. But yeah, I like the whole idea of like maturing Kratos, maturing people like Nathan Drake, doing these like elevated versions of the character. So it's very curious territory what they do going forward.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Next question from Nick, who says, thoughts on who should play Logan in the new Wolverine game? Consensus seems to be Roger Clark or Jeffrey Pierce at the moment. Also thoughts on God of War being a duology rather than a trilogy, which we kind of touched on before, and of Corey Barlog's confirmation not being the director. Thoughts on the Wolverine stuff first?
I'm really excited because of the fact that if they can, because it's Insomniac that are doing this as well, if they can do the same with what Spider-Man and Spider-Man Miles Morales has done for Spider-Man, then I feel like we could be on the cusp of seeing new reinvented superhero games,
because
they used to be the absolute dreck of all of the video game industry. Like tie-in video games that were superhero related were the worst. Like Thor the video game, Silver Surfer for the NES, and the Iron Man games that came out, they were some of the worst titles
ever.
So I'm hoping that this is like the start of it.
The thing that's quite interesting with Wolverine is that my reference point is X-Men Origins Wolverine, which like the movie was terrible, but the game was incredible. And like they had that really cool healing system where like you would literally, all the bullets would go through, you get all cut
and you'd see it like almost
slowly,
like healing.
Yeah, you'd slowly come back again. I hope it has that healing system in, because no other game has had that, where like they literally coded like a skeleton, the musculature, and just slowly let it wear away if you get damaged. I thought it was so, so cool. My general reaction, just to be completely honest, for a Wolverine game was actually kind of like, okay. Like, because I feel like we've done that. I wish it was a Daredevil game. I wish it was someone that hasn't had that treatment. Like for me, it's like, because for me, it'll be great. It'll be solid. Everyone loves Wolverine. He's going to say Bob, and he's going to say he's the best at what he does, and he's going to say all those things. But I feel like we know exactly how that's going to play. It's going to be another third-person hack and slash game with Wolverine in the middle of it. And I hope they think of something to do other than that. But the amount, the money that's riding on it, I just feel like we know exactly what that is.
That's the thing. Like it's with all like video games nowadays, because they cost hundreds of millions of dollars, like they have to make sure that they are getting that money back, and it's tying it to a fashionable IP. And even though Wolverine isn't out, is he's not currently active, obviously, with Logan, the film, like writing out at the end of his story there. Mm-hmm. He's still very much in the public consciousness. So it's still an IP to trade on. Personally, if like I was to say to make a new superhero game that people would actually enjoy, but maybe not have heard of, make a game about Cloak and Dagger. Like having
something like the gameplay would be different.
Yeah, like a two-player co-op thing with two very different sets of powers that complement each other in a co-op gameplay setting. Like that would sell well in terms of gameplay, but maybe not in terms of recognizable IP.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking of. Like, if you did Daredevil, obviously it was the massive momentum coming off the Netflix show, and then it's obviously died away a bit because it went away. But like, if you did a Daredevil game, you could think of a whole combat system based around like echolocation and tracking where bullets are coming from and dodging and all the stuff with the billy clubs. And I was just kind of like, I know this is a safe bet. Like, it's a safe bet. It's Wolverine. It's going to be solid. The actual question about who should play Logan, my go-to is always just Steve Blum, because it was always him in the animated series.
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to ask him in the other games. Because it's just such a recognizable voice, distinctive growl that he's got.
Did you play the X2 game when the movie came out? The one that Mark Hamill?
No.
Mark Hamill was the voice of Wolverine in that. And that was my first Wolverine game. So I loved that game. It's very ropey, but it was fun. You could take out 2 and 3 people at once, and it was great.
Is that the one that he has no recollection of recording? Because I remember him like talking about some of the voiceover gigs he's done in the past. Everyone was like, oh, you're really famous for like the Joker and stuff like that. But then they were like, you've also done this. And he's like, did I? I don't remember doing this one. Like, and I can't remember if it was tied to an X-Men game.
I feel like the world has also forgotten that, because it doesn't, you think of him as the Joker guy in regards to voice acting. But Mark Hamill totally played Wolverine in the X2 tie-in game. The other thing about God of War being a duology, I assume it'll go forward. Do you have any general thoughts on Corey Barlog being swapped out as the director?
Just catch me up to speed on this one. He's
just forgot. Well, just for God of War, because it was obviously Corey Barlog was like the creative director on the 2018 one. And he very much wrote Kratos and Atreus' relationship based on his emerging relationship with his own son. And so him being swapped out and it being so, obviously the game was announced.
Sorry, I thought that for some reason he was attached to the Wolverine thing then, because I was suddenly like, wait, what? I missed this. No, I've got no problem with him being switched out. If he feels like he's done all he can do and he's passing the reins over, then it's going to be to somebody that he trusts to take it forward. So I feel that's fine, because now we can just be excited about what next project he's going to be working on.
I think it's an interesting one where I'll just wait and see how it goes, because it's like the Corey Barlog's, like there's so much of, assumedly so much of him in God of War. Like, he was the one who wanted to have the everything's done in one take style cinematography. And like I said, the writing was very much him. And he was like front and center of the on the launch day, reacting to the reviews. And I think a lot of people associate him almost Kojima style with that creative product. So I do wonder what the sequel will feel like. And I think that if people don't like it, they'll immediately go, oh, well, it's clearly because he wasn't involved anymore.
Yeah. In fact, they've got kind of the best of both worlds. They bought themselves a bit of an out. If they say, if people don't like the sequel, they'll still have paid for it and they'll still write about it and be like, you know, we can't compare it to the first because it's obviously not the same director, creative director behind it.
I think
like, they've actually been quite clever in announcing very early on that he's not a part of it.
I guess, they kind of do have the sort of fallback. And I think I like the idea that he's departing from it, so that the middle installment, or if it, whatever chunk it becomes in the timeline, does feel meaningfully different from the sort of father-son dynamic of the original one. I guess we'll see how it goes. Plus,
they've always got it so that if the sequel doesn't do as well, when they bring it out for the inevitable threequel, that means they can bring him back on, and then everyone will buy it then, because it's like, hey, a return to form.
There is that. I mean, he said that he is still staying on board in like an advisory role or something as well. So it's not like
it'll
he's
be
leaving.
Fine. It'll be in
Santa Monica. I think it's just that some people are kind of, and I get the go-to sentiment of just like, there's so much of him in that game. Oh my God, he's not in the sequel. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, it's that time of the week again.
Oh,
my question is that, isn't it strange that Knights of the Old Republic started as an Xbox exclusive and now it's being remade as a timed PlayStation exclusive?
That is a bit mad, actually.
I never really thought of it as an Xbox exclusive back in the day, but I guess that it absolutely was. I mean, it was that whole thing where it was only on the original Xbox, I guess PC over time.
I guess it comes to show that just like the changing of the nature of things, doesn't it? Like who's in it, who's got the money, who's got the control over the industry, who's sort of like collecting the goodwill from other companies.
Well, the thing
and stuff
with this
like
thing,
that.
Being a PS5 exclusive, a PlayStation exclusive, like it's Star Wars, it's a huge IP, it's Knights of the Old Republic. I can't imagine that timed exclusive staying timed very long, because there's just so much money to be made.
I'd say 6 months to a year at best. Yeah. And then, to be honest, if we're being brutally honest about it, we'll probably get the better version coming to Xbox when any sort of DLC or Game of the Year edition comes out, because we'll probably get enhanced features. There'll be there'll be something to incentivize.
And it'll be on Game Pass. I remember
the painful sting of buying Resident Evil 4 in the GameCube and just thinking, yes, I've got this. No one else is going to be able to play this. I'm having the best time of my life. And then seeing the PS2 version come out with like all of the Ada campaigns, all of the extras added in, all the secret bits, and I'm just like, oh, that's good, that's fine, don't worry about it, I'm just the so don't worry about me.
Well, that's the thing, it's like Star Wars games are in a weird place, where Jedi Fallen Order was solid, Battlefront 2 took its sweet time to get ready, and then we're just in this weird break now because Rise of Skywalker, the movie, was such a complete mess. So I'm kind of like, if this is going to be the next wave of Star Wars games, but it's only on one platform, it's like, well, you kind of need to make a better you know, reintroduction to that mythos. What were your general thoughts on Knights of the Old Republic reboot? Because I sort of, I thought they would have showed way more than they did.
Well, to be honest, mate, I am just absolutely on board 100%. And I know that it is a very dangerous hype train to ride, because I was reading a few articles recently, and I do actually have to agree with the consensus that I do think that if we're bringing the Knights of the Old Republic into the modern day, then I really think that we should address things like the combat and some of the other things. I do think that the story that runs through the original Knights of the Old Republic is absolutely incredible. Yeah, like, I feel for pacing in terms of the worlds you visit, in terms of the character development that goes across, I totally would keep everything as it is. But I do think that we're going to see a revision of the combat system, and maybe that's why we've not seen any gameplay elements for it, because they're still trying to figure out. I hope we don't go the route of a fully third person action shooter game. I don't want that. I want some tactical element. I want some party management. I want some control over tactics that are going into the battle. But I do think that sometimes the combat system was a little bit clunky because of the fact that, like, you know, you would select your attacks, you stack them up, you'd watch the animation play out. I feel like that needs to be a bit quicker in order to hook the modern day audiences, because if you just make a straight shot-for-shot remake of it, it probably will lose a bit of interest and momentum when it's sat aside, like stuff like Mass Effect and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what makes me wonder, because BioWare put a statement out saying they're not involved in it at all. It's gone to, I think it's Aspyre who's doing the development side of it. So I guess they'll have free reign to just...
What's Aspyre's like track record?
I forget what else they did.
Let's do a quick Google search, shall we? let's figure out what they got by name.
But I bet they did Stubbs the Zombie. They did Civilization 6. Or at least they're the titles that come up on Google alongside them. They've done some of the... They helped out with the old Jedi Knight games and stuff as well, so they have the pedigree, and they helped out on Knights of the Old Republic too. I guess they're more known as more of like a publisher than like necessarily a developer.
I mean, not gonna lie, if we were looking to the thing of like Star Wars Republic Commando and Jedi Knight Academy, if they managed to do Jedi Academy style combat, I think that people might be pretty receptive to that. Again, I know that I've just said that it's not a third person action shooter, and that is literally that, but I feel like that was a good enough game, or a good enough example of how to do lightsaber combat well.
Well, the thing that I love, like, because I went through Knights of the Old Republic, or the first sort of half of it-ish, like the other month, because I was just, something reminded me of the bit where you build your own lightsaber, and in my head it was this full-on go to the caves, pick your crystal, you mine it and craft it and whatever. It's just one side mission, you just press X on it it just does it. But I played the beginning of it, and I love the setting. I mean, I've played it before, but it was back in 2003 or something. And I love that whole setting of that game. And I love how slow the whole intro is. I love exploring the Citadel place that you're in and everything. And I feel like that's going to be a hard thing to balance with a new combat model, because you would just fly through it, I think, if you could chew through those enemies and stuff. So I guess I'm curious what they do with that. I would want them to take influence from Final Fantasy VII's remake, where you can play it, pause, input command, whatever. Or you can just hold different shoulder buttons. You know, and do stuff in real time. So I guess I'm curious what that thing would be.
Just a curiosity here. What's your musical minute, your minute of music going to be? What have you been listening to this week?
God, my music minute this week is probably going to be Turnstile. The new Turnstile album. It's just, I've kind of just had that on repeat. Iron Maiden's new album as well. I mentioned that last time.
Yeah.
Senjutsu. Just a lot of that, a lot of synthwave. Because Dance with the Dead announced their new album/single. They just put some artwork out for it, so that got me back into synth stuff. Alex Yarmak on Spotify does a lot of metal versions of Hotline music. Which is just good? Like, oh God, yes. Just really good, chunky metal versions of the songs from Hotline Miami 1 and 2. If anyone's not heard them, his version of Hydrogen and Decade Dance and La Perve are all incredible.
Okay.
That would be mine. What's your music minute?
I'd be listening to a lot of just one band on repeat to get ready for an upcoming gig. It's my first gig in 2 years. And it's just a small time one. I'm going to see a band called La Brock. They are like an 80s power pop band.
Yes, yes. And I'm only going to see them.
Well, the thing is, I'm only going to see them because my friend Reese was just like, I've got a spare ticket. Do you want to come? And I was like, you know what, mate? I haven't been out to anything in ages. Let's just go. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that it'll be good. Listening to it, it's personally a little bit cheesier than I would normally listen to. It's very much like sort of 3 a.m. screaming it at the top of your lungs, drunk out of your mind. But then again, that's exactly what I'm going to be this Friday.
Because so I've got Trivium booked in for December, I think. That's my first gig since last February or something. And I can go and get lost at a Trivium gig. Final question from Steve Ahrens. Hello, legends. What game or moment made you realize that you were a gamer? Also, I just completed the Ori games after hearing Scott tell Josh so much to play them on different occasions, and I had a blast with both. Josh, go play them. Well, I will relay that message. Or go badger him on social media because he really should play the Ori games. Mr. Jules, though, when did you realize that you were a gamer? I've never really thought about it this way. I guess like, what was the first thing you got really sucked into?
I think that I got really sucked into playing Secret of Mana on the SNES, just because of the fact that my dad, I think I've told this story before on Chatty Faces, he had like a save. I went and picked it up, played through it, didn't really understand the game, so just learned by doing. Mm-hmm. I found it incredibly tough, but managed to beat a boss. Using the party that he had already created. Mm-hmm. And I was just really happy about it. And I showed it to him and he's like, oh, okay, cool. Delete that because I want to be it sort of thing. So it was a bit of like a bittersweet moment there. But I remember the amount of time that I put into it. I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to start my own save file then and go through the game and do it that way. Mm-hmm. And I do remember it's one of those things where I remember playing Secret of Mana a lot, but just not being very good at it because I'm very much one of those gamers, or I was back in the day, where I didn't read the instructions. I just was like, the game should tell me how to play it through through informative gameplay. Whereas that was not the case. I should have studied that manual like it was a goddamn school book because I've
only played like 10 minutes of that game. Like I know that it's a huge deal, but I've missed it back in the day. Same with Chrono Trigger. I know that they're both massive deals, but I never got there.
It's one of those things where like I really want to recommend the remake that Square Enix did recently, but it wasn't that great. It was like mechanically it was kind of the same, but with a few tweaks that kind of seemed at the detriment of the player, and the sprite work didn't look too great either. But it is still weirdly probably the best way to play the game because of accessibility in terms of getting it. Mm-hmm. It hasn't aged well. That's the problem. Legend of Mana, the one that came after it, is really good. That fixed all of the problems. And now that that's getting a remake, I'm not sure if it's even out yet, but it's pretty much out soon or out now. I can't remember. But that is definitely a much better game. And I'd recommend that to step into.
I think for me, I think I've told the story before, but it would be the original Metal Gear Solid. That was the thing that just took me over. Like I was playing games before then and stuff like Shinobi and Sonic and everything, but it was looking forward to Metal Gear Solid, not believing the screenshots and then finally sitting down with it. And when I finally hit credits, that was like a lifetime achievement for me because I was just like, oh my God, I've done it. And I remember running down the stairs to tell my parents that I'd finished Metal Gear Solid and they just went, What's that, son? And I just thought it was like, I've done it, lad. I've done it, mum and dad. I've done this thing. And I think they just told me to calm down because I was probably jumping around the room. But yeah, I just, I remember that being the absolute just pinnacle of entertainment back in sort of 1997 or whatever, even though gaming itself predated then. But I think that gave way to the PS2. It was definitely the PlayStation 2 era when I spent, it would have been the summer of 2002. Or maybe 2001, whenever I got my PS2, the first summer holidays after that, and I just played the console. I didn't see anybody. And I remember just my dad going, "Do you realize you've played this for 6 weeks?" And I was just like, "Yes, Dad, I have." And
it's been a great time.
It's been a lovely 6 weeks and preparing myself for a career in games banner. But yeah, it would be something like that. Anything on the early PS2 or Metal Gear Solid. So yes, thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. We've got a massive chunk of stuff to get through. I'll roll over some questions to next week because we've got so many to do. And also keep an eye out every Thursday on Twitter when we do the question itself. You can always submit your stuff. I'm on Twitter at /LP89. Jules, what are you?
You can find me at RetroJ with a zero.
Beautiful. And thanks to everybody again. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UPP. And we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.